Why we love the Song Dynasty. Exploring the history and charm of one of China's most fascinating dynasties. Episode 1. Meet the Song Dynasty. For many people in the West, when imagining ancient China, they are almost certainly thinking of the Song Dynasty, with its ornate architecture, simple and natural costumes, exquisite tea ceremonies, fine porcelain, and the pursuit of cultural excellence. But some experts will also tell you that it was actually a poor and insecure dynasty, permanently under threat from hostile neighbors. So what's going on? Why the difference in opinion? I'm Bob Jones, and in this Why We Love the Song Dynasty podcast, I'll be throwing the spotlight on what was to become one of China's most iconic dynasties in its long and colorful history. The Song Dynasty lasted for just short of 320 years, from the year 960. To put it in perspective, Europe was still in its dark ages. The Romans had upped and left without so much as a parting gift, leaving the lands they had occupied to a succession of barbarian peoples such as the Huns, the Goths, the Vandals, and the Franks. All the high tech they had brought with them, like central heating and roads, fell to rack and ruin. The Dark Ages, dark not just because it was all a bit miserable, but also because there was very little information to tell us what life was actually like. It was literally a time of intellectual darkness. Meanwhile, 9,000 kilometers to the east, we find a highly cultured civilization which was living the high life and reveling in creativity. Say hello to the Song Dynasty. We actually know rather a lot about the Song Dynasty, thanks to a whole host of manuscripts, paintings, poems, and artifacts. It would be impossible to detail every aspect of this amazing society in the time allowed for these programs, but we are going to try. In each episode, I'll be focusing on just one person, aspect, thing, or idea that sprang from this period of enormous social and intellectual creativity, which some have likened to Europe's Renaissance. But let's not put the cart before the horse. The Song Dynasty predates the European Renaissance by some 200 years, and in fact, there are some who suggest that the early traders along the Silk Road, such as Marco Polo, who visited China shortly after the collapse of the Song Dynasty, and found a country of printing presses, gunpowder, compasses, paper money, brimming with humanist philosophies, and open for business, trading spices, tea, and porcelain, could very well have kicked off the European Renaissance in the first place. And then, because a certain Italian explorer, Christopher Columbus, was an avid reader of Marco Polo's journals, you could also argue that the influence of the Song Dynasty also directly led to the arrival in the Americas by the Europeans. Now, there's a thought. The United States may owe its entire existence to China's Song Dynasty. Not as fanciful as it sounds. But look, we really are getting ahead of ourselves. We should start at the very beginning, because that's always a very good place to start. In fact, we need to start slightly before the beginning of the Song Dynasty. It's important to set the scene. By the year 907 AD, the Tang Dynasty had collapsed, largely because of a number of natural disasters and mischief-makers. And at the beginning of the 10th century, all that was gained by the Tang degenerated into a bunch of warring factions, known as the Five Dynasties and Ten Kingdoms. there followed a period of wars, dynastic skullduggery, poisonings, torture, and the like, which in recent years has provided Chinese TV with a plentiful supply of historical drama material. Against this backdrop, enter Zhao Qingyin, the second son of an important military commander called Zhao Hongyin. Born in 927 in Luoyang in Henan province, he turned out to be a chip off the old block, a fine archer and outstanding horseman. Legend has it that he once managed to tame a wild horse at speed without a saddle and despite being knocked off the animal as it galloped through a low city gate. Despite being dazed by the collision, he jumped straight back on the horse and brought it under control. Zhao Qingyin spent a lot of time wandering around fighting, mainly for other people, battling rebellions and fending off marauders. He wasn't overly fussy who he would fight for, although he clearly knew which side his bread was buttered. It's ironic that later he would demand so much loyalty from others and yet have such fickle origins. To cut a long story short, and it really is a long story, Zhao Qingyin rose through the ranks quickly, eventually in charge of some 4,000 elite palace troops, and as military governor, he moved his enemies into dead-end jobs in faraway places. The emperor at the time died, and his 7-year-old son took over. The troops didn't like taking orders from a child, and after a sleepless night, they all crowded round Zhao Qingyin's tent, shouting, "The army is without a master," they said. "We want you to become emperor." Qingyin had a hangover from drinking too much the night before and told them all to go away and come back when his headache had subsided. But they wouldn't go and pressed him several times. Eventually he gave in, but not before he made them all swear to obey him unconditionally. He wanted total obedience. He banished the child emperor and became the first emperor of what was to become the Song Dynasty. He was posthumously honored with the temple name Tai Tzu, meaning Grand Ancestor. Immediately he set about reunifying China again, made sure that court officials were there because of their ability and not because of their connections, and curbed the power of the military. "Obey me, stick to the rules, and don't rock the boat." That was his strategy. But we still have a problem. How do you get from this point, the arrival on the throne of a warrior emperor, to a flourishing dynasty rich in cultural exploits, with the people living the high life, drinking tea, writing poetry, and collecting fine objects? That is a very good question. Hopefully, we can find some answers throughout the series. But here are some initial thoughts. Insecurity often spurs creativity. If on a daily basis you're worried about invasion and your agriculture is at the mercy of natural disasters and climatic whims, well, what have you got to lose? Let's have a good time while it lasts. And that's what they did, under Tai Tzu's benign and ever-watchful eye. Writing poetry, creating and admiring art, writing and printing books, studying astronomy and navigation, giving each other banknotes, posting letters, and blowing things up with gunpowder. People gathered in private clubs, and the cities had lively entertainment quarters. They loved public festivals like Qingming and the Lantern Festival, getting together to enjoy a constant array of amusements. There were puppeteers, acrobats, theatre actors, sword swallowers, snake charmers, storytellers, singers and musicians, prostitutes, and no end of places to relax, including tea houses, restaurants and organised banquets. The citizens of Song attended social clubs in large numbers. There were tea clubs, exotic food clubs, antiquarian and art collectors clubs, horse-loving clubs, poetry clubs and music clubs. Theatres were popular, not only among the elite, but the general population too. The four largest drama theatres in Kaifeng, the Song capital, could hold audiences of several thousand each. Taizu spent 16 years reconquering and consolidating his empire, opening up trade with countries and empires far and wide. Official records talk of ambassadors in India, Egypt, the Byzantine Empire, Japan, and Korea. By the Song era, China had at least 10 cities with a population of 1 million each, becoming the most populous country in the world and certainly the most advanced. Emperor Taizu died unexpectedly in 976 at the age of 49. Some say that he was murdered by his younger brother Zhao Qingyi, who had been promised a crack at being emperor by his mother, the Empress Dowager Du, on her deathbed. The truth is shrouded in the mists of history. Halfway through the Song era, they had to decamp suddenly southwards to get away from aggressive neighbours, and the Song dynasty was finally toppled by Kublai Khan, who was simply better organised and more disciplined than the Song, and the dynasty crumbled to dust. However, despite conquest, the die was cast. The administrative, cultural, philosophical, military inheritance of the Song dynasty, inspired by Zhao Qingying, lived on, providing some of the most significant technological advances in Chinese history. So, let's hear it for the Emperor Taizu, the first emperor of the Song dynasty. Special thanks go out to Sanlian Zhongdu for their help in creating the content for this show. This is Bob Jones. Thanks for listening. Join me again next time.